Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the south side of St. Louis, this is Real Spoilers. This is a super bonus episode. We don't have a number for it. We'll call it maybe an annual issue, since I'm a comic book guy, so we'll call it an annual. Just to get these real plugs out of the way, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. You can join the League of Show Sharers on there as well. Jump in, join the conversation, all that good stuff. Real Spoilers on Twitter. Also, if you feel like donating, don't forget we have a Patreon, $5 a month. Get you some free content, commentaries, some movies that probably would cover, you know, that we wouldn't cover on the show. So I've got three super special guests. We recently covered their movie Ready or Not on a most recent episode. So let's have these fine gentlemen introduce themselves to you. Gentlemen, after you.
What's up?
There's one.
Special guest number one. My name is Tyler. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Special guest number two.
I am Chad Valella, and thanks so much for having us on this today.
Absolutely. And special guest number three.
I am Matt. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
Yeah!
Hi, St. Louis.
You three guys are the creative team behind Ready or Not, are you not?
It's a fact. It's a fact.
Truth.
We are.
Yeah. Perfect. Perfect.
We are a small corner of the creative team behind Ready or Not, but yeah. We are the radio silence portion of the creative team behind Ready or Not.
And I'm glad you brought that up. So Radio Silence is you three gentlemen kind of came together as a group prior to 2011, but Radio Silence was born in 2011. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's fair.
And you guys did, in 2012, there was a segment, and that was the 1031-98 segment, correct?
Yes, a VHS.
A VHS.
Yep.
Yes, correct, a VHS, which I got to tell you, had some of the best visuals in that entire thing.
Oh, thanks, man.
The hands coming out of the wall was some of the creepiest stuff I'd seen. I love that segment and those movies in general, but that segment with the hands coming out of the walls was creepy.
Shout out to Justin Martinez, the VFX guy who did all the incredible effects work in our segment.
Yeah, it was good stuff. And then we had Devil's Due in 2014.
Yep, let's just skip right past that one and talk about
Fair enough. And then Southbound, which actually I just watched both of those movies today.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
That's a busy morning.
It is a little bit, yeah. You know, you drop the kids off, and then you just plop down and watch some good horror stuff. So coming out of VHS, you guys kind of went into the found footage genre with Devil's Due, which had some really good, I find found footage to be, I think by that point, it was a little bit overdone. Is that fair?
Yep.
You know? But there was some good stuff in that movie. I thought instead of it being one of those, we're just like, why does he have a camera? Like, you gave a legitimate reason as to why the husband has a camera.
Yeah, man, that was, found footage is tricky. We obviously there's a real we have a soft spot for it. It's we having, you know, made a handful of projects, shorts, and then Devil's Due in that style. There are certainly a lot of things that we love about it. It is it's a tricky format. We tried to reinvent it as in as many ways as we could, but you know, it's a format that is very much limited by the kind of rules, if if you're playing by the rules of found footage, you really have to work hard at answering that question of why am I seeing what I'm seeing? Why don't the characters turn the camera off and help the person that they love when they could? Though I think we're seeing now more and more that people are doing terrible things, and instead of helping those in need, people are pulling out their phones and recording it. We're sort of entering a new fucked up world of found footage in our culture.
Do you think it's possible that given where we are in the culture with cell phones and GoPros, do you think that found footage could make a comeback?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, we're
going to do something new.
Yeah.
I guess when you look at, when you look at the Blair Witch or you look at Paranormal Activity, I guess those are kind of the two most successful found footage flicks. I guess I feel like with the technology that we have today, like the idea of somebody holding a camera is easier to accept, maybe, and never putting it down.
Sure. Yeah. Sure.
So yeah, so in 2015, you guys did Southbound, which I also just watched. That's a crazy ass movie, in the best way.
Yeah, that one's a little bonkers, right?
Yeah, totally.
That was a lot of fun. I mean, that's just bringing the team back together from VHS. So a lot of the same people that did VHS did Southbound. And we, like, coming off of Devil's Due and everything, we just wanted to get back to, working with people that we really like and admire and have a good time with a movie. And, that one all came together pretty quickly. We all got together every Wednesday night at Roxanne Benjamin's place and had pizza and worked on our stories together. That one was a lot of fun.
I was going to ask how that process is, given that. So the basic premise of that movie is we start off with a story, and then every subsequential story is connected somehow.
Right.
So did you guys figure out what your stories wanted to be and then find that connective tissue, or was the connective tissue always there?
Basically, we went in. Brad Miska initially pitched it as like a subgenre anthology film, so like where each segment would be a little bit different. But we came up with the idea for like what basically the hook is, which is the interconnected shorts. We called them zipper transitions and how they zipper into each other. And they're like, we need to be a little bit more thematically together as to what this world is and where we are. And basically just created the sandbox for everybody to play in.
Okay.
And without giving any spoilers away or anything like that, because we'd love people to go watch it and let us know their thoughts. It's purgatory. Yeah.
Everybody
well, there we go.
Doomed.
All right, cool.
There is no escape. Life is darkness. Have fun. Enjoy Southbound.
Enjoy Southbound. Yeah.
So I have one question that I don't think will spoil anything. What was the connection to the gal working at the gas station and the dude looking, it was you guys. Were you guys looking for her?
The person working at the gas station?
So there's the girl working at the gas station that,
Sutter,
you guys actually see, right?
Yeah, Sutter.
Yeah.
Okay. And then earlier in the movie, like at the segment previous, don't one of you guys hold up a picture of her?
Picture is of the younger daughter that we see at the end of the first segment. Yeah.
Okay. So what happened? Like why were they looking for her? Or is that a spoiler?
They were looking for the family. The guys in the truck in the last segment are looking for the dad who is essentially responsible for the death of the guy's daughter.
Got it.
Mitch's daughter. So it's kind of a revenge quest that goes further than they anticipate.
Okay. Okay. Well, yes, go check out Southbound. I don't know. I mean, it's on Amazon right now, which is where I watched it. And it's fantastic. It's a good little, Tales in the Crypt. It's kind of, Black Mirror / Twilight Zone flick. And then finally in 2019, you guys hit the ground running with Ready or Not, which was a flick that I was insanely excited for from the jump, and it delivered exactly everything that I wanted it to be.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah, it was great. So you guys had Samara Weaving coming off of The Babysitter and Mayhem, which are two flicks, if you haven't seen, go do that. And so how did that one come about? Like, what was the creative process on that one?
That was a kind of a long process getting it going, and then a very quick process once it got going, because the script got sent to us shortly after maybe Devil's Due, like 2014, 2015.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and we didn't get it.
Oh.
It was called Family Ritual at the time. We didn't.
They hired somebody else, idiots.
Those bastards.
Right. And then it came back around after Southbound, and they were kind of looking for a new take on it. And we were like, yes, we'd love to. It'd be wonderful. Like, please. And Trip, Vincent, Jamie Vanderbilt are the producers. So we worked with them and the writers, Guy and Ryan, for a while. And then Searchlight got on board, like, I think it was the day after Trump was elected. So 2016.
Oh, gross.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we worked on it with Searchlight for a while, kind of honing it in on like, just focusing it. It was a longer story. It had more in... It was like 4 days. It was Meet the Family, Not a Wedding.
Oh, okay.
So we got
okay.
it down. It's a Survive the Night movie. It's about the wedding. It's about the bride. And I think that's when it really clicked for everyone, and Searchlight gave it the go-ahead. And then Samara was the first person who got cast. Like, and once we got Samara, everything else kind of started to fall in place.
I feel like this is her breakout performance.
It should be. She deserves it.
Yeah.
She's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, man. She's a movie star.
Man, she's so good.
So great.
I'm glad you brought up the Fox Searchlight thing. Was there any... So given what happened with... there was another flick that actually got pulled because of the fear of what it could entice?
Yeah, The Hunt.
The Hunt.
The Hunt, yeah. So when the Disney deal goes down, was there any fear from you guys that, oh, crap, maybe ours is going to get shit canned too? Or was it always just like, we're just going, there's no worries, let's just roll?
I don't know if there was any fear. I don't know if we had any specific fear that was going to be the outcome of Ready or Not. We, I mean, we knew that the studio was way behind the film, the message of the project. You know, Ready or Not is. We should also. I should start by saying that none of us have seen The Hunt, so it's hard for us to.
Sure.
Which is kind of the problem, right? Like, we all culturally seem to have there's an opinion about a movie that nobody has seen, which feels a little bit. A little bit irresponsible.
I completely agree.
So who the fuck knows what the message of that movie is? But you know, we can say, just sort of based on what we do know about The Hunt, that Ready or Not is less it's not apolitical. I mean, obviously, like, it's hard to make a piece of any kind of piece of art that's totally apolitical.
Right.
Like, our opinions are very much present in Ready or Not, but we're not. There's nothing about Ready or Not that in any way, shape, or form is glorifying. We don't think, you know, the violence that is in the movie. Like, it's very fucked up and very intense, and the situation is all very heightened. But there's also sort of an absurdist quality to it.
Sure.
So I don't think that we were ever really worried about it. I think that we were worried about a trend being set by that choice. And maybe be worried about that a little bit.
You were worried that by Universal canning the movie or shelving the movie for the time being?
Yeah, like, we just don't, right. We aren't sure that that's the best way to, you know, art needs to be creating conversations, and part of that is that, you know, we should be willing to, well, one, vote with our dollars. If you're not interested in seeing something, then you don't have to see it. Like, nobody's being forced to watch The Hunt. But that good art is also supposed to challenge people and challenge their perspectives, and maybe have a conversation, or at least start a conversation that we culturally are having a difficult time having. And so it's a slippery slope when you start canceling the release of a movie. It's interesting. It was a strange kind of thing to be sort of sucked into, because obviously we were kind of adjacent to it, it was a fascinating thing to watch happen.
And then the Disney deal happens, and was there any concern that Disney might shelve a bunch of the Fox Searchlight stuff? So obviously we on the show we talked about the Disney stuff and how maybe Fox Searchlight. We don't know what that life is going to be post Disney.
Right.
Was there any concern when the Disney deal happens like where this movie was going to live, like if it was going to live under the Disney banner, if it was going to live under Fox Searchlight, was it, or how does that work?
Well, I mean, Searchlight, to their credit, are pretty siloed off from the rest of Fox and the rest of Disney because they make movies that the other, the big, that Big Fox and Disney just do not make.
Sure.
So I think if they do get absorbed into the Disney machine, it's going to be down the line.
Okay.
A little bit.
Okay.
So they assured us that there would be no like hiccups or anything because of the merger, because you know they're basically bigger fish to fry for Disney when they're, you know, consuming Fox.
Trying to get that Fantastic Four and X-Men. That's all.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. You need the next Fantastic Four.
Yeah, because those previous ones.
The first
were so
two
good.
Were great. Yeah.
First
yeah.
three,
yeah.
man. Don't forget. Yeah, like, yeah. There's that third
that's
one
right.
that
yeah,
nobody
right.
really
there's
talks about.
Right. They were all in terms of the creative side of everything, and they assured us everything. And then it got to the marketing side too, and it was on Searchlight's. They're one of their largest marketing spends and the widest release for Searchlight ever, which
oh, really?
I think that was advantageous to us and the Disney because of the Disney thing, because they're like, look, we can make commercial movies too, not just, you know, Oscar winners that like 250 people like,
right.
and so they use that muscle to our advantage, and that was something. That we were very grateful for, and we loved what they did, you know. And just speaking back to how that Disney Fox merger does kind of screw things up, right before we went into pre-production on Ready or Not, we wrote a movie for 20th Century Fox that is now in kind of limbo.
You
because
did.
Yeah, just the script. A lot of people are interested. We're hoping it gets off the ground again, but it's just like one of those things, like where does this live in this new universe, and people can't just find a place for it yet. So that got stalled a little bit after, you know, while we were in production and even in post of Ready or Not.
Okay.
So there was like a benefit for us, and also like, oh no, that kind of, you know, was a little bit of thwarting our master plan to take over the world through Fox. Or so, yes.
Right. So we had a little bit of a debate on the show when we were talking about Ready or Not. I'm a horror nerd, but I was hesitant to call Ready or Not a horror movie. Is that what am I right, or am I going to have to issue an apology to my?
Well, you should apologize. No, just kidding. We talked about that a lot, and it's like, you know, obviously our kind of goal with the movie was to have as much as is possible when you're making a movie that, you know, borrows tropes from other things.
Sure.
To still kind of give it a singular tone where you could be like, oh, that's, we didn't want to copy tone. We wanted to kind of try to create a tone.
Okay.
And to that end, we were very aware that we were like, this is not, if you go into this movie wanting just like a classic horror movie, you might be let down, because, you know, we shy away from the blood sometimes until we don't.
That's what makes, I think, it the most effective.
That's how we feel too. And honestly, at the end of the day, a lot of it is just taste. It's like, it's what we like. And we always kind of use the guiding principle of like, we are making a horror movie, but it always has to feel like a thriller, and it should also be funny.
That's,
you know,
what I called like, it. It's like a funnier You're Next.
Totally.
And I don't mean
I'm
that
not gonna say if it's funnier than You're Next. I have no idea. But
have you not but, so I said that the triple feature for this would be Ready or Not, Cabin in the Woods, and You're Next.
That'd be great. We'd be honored to be in that trilogy.
Well, you deserve to be in that trilogy, because they all fit perfectly together. But I think Samara Weaving is the funniest part of the movie, and I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I think her delivery on certain lines was the inflection in the way she delivered certain things, like when the gun doesn't go off.
Yeah.
Just the look on her face, like, good Lord, like, of course.
She is like a unique talent. Like, all those things that could kind of, you know, if you just watch the movie on the surface level and you're like, oh, it's a fucking movie about hide and seek and whatever, blah, 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 it's fine.
Yeah.
Hopefully you enjoy it. But like, if you pay attention to like the nuance of Sam and the rest of the cast, really, but she has an ability to play fear. Like, she's empathetic. She's funny. She has all of the colors happening when they need to. It's a kind of control that you rarely see, at least I don't. And to have her do something like this, where she could really use them all, was such a treat. Like,
yeah. We jokingly said this Halloween, I have a feeling that you're going to see a bunch of Harleys. You're going to see a bunch of, Miras maybe. I don't know. But the wedding dress with the chucks, with the Rambo, you know, Chewbacca, you know, belt around the shoulders. I think we're going to see, hopefully we see a lot of that, because that just when she tears, what I thought was insanely awesome and so smart on your guys's part was as her character changes, she's almost like John McClane.
We talked about that so much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a very good reference.
Yeah, her clothes get dirtier. Like, McClane wears that god-awful... I don't know how that... I own those kind of shirts, and they don't last long. So the fact that shirt lasted that entire movie is insane to me. But, like, she tears the bottom of the dress off, and her character changes a little bit. She tears the arm off. And the character changes again, and she's getting even more and more badass. So I thought the costume changes with her character was super brilliant on everybody's part.
Yeah, it was a really fun way to track her arc, to have this thing that she's, you know, that she's wearing as a second skin really showcase all of the shit that she's been through. And we also just really loved this idea when we were talking early on about what the dress should look like. And in early drafts of the script, it was actually written very specifically as a spaghetti strap dress. And we were like, no, we need to add more layers to it. It needs to be long sleeve, because we love the idea that the dress, as the story progresses, that the dress becomes kind of its own survival kit.
Yeah.
Right. It's an obstacle, right, that she has to overcome at first, and she tears the bottom off of it, and then its use throughout the rest of the film is, she uses the sash to strangle Stevens. She uses the sleeve as a tourniquet on her hand. That it becomes this thing that's serving her. That's being used in a fun and interesting and ironic and believable way.
Yeah,
we wanted there to be. So we wanted the character to be really represented in that costume. And our costume designer, Avery, she crushed it on all the costumes, but that wedding dress is so iconic. And it was the thing, I think we were nervous that we were going to get a ton of notes on it. You know, wardrobe is something that the studios usually have a lot of opinions about. And it was, that was it. Like, that wedding dress, she put it on Sam, and it was like, this is the fucking perfect thing. Never got any notes on it. It was just, it was like, it absolutely, totally made sense when we saw it for the first time.
No, and I think that's brilliant. The just the, like you said, the John McClane-esque nature of her character worked perfectly with that dress. I think if it had been the spaghetti strap dress, I'm sure she would have made it work, but I think that the long sleeves and like the lace turtleneck only added to the badassery that was her character. So I kind of just want to talk about, pick your brains a little bit, how you guys got into horror. I think a lot of our listeners kind of all come from the 80s. I know that I did. And like the slasher genre kind of kicked off my love for the genre, whether that's good or bad, depending on what psychiatrist you want to talk to.
Right.
So where did your love of horror start?
Well, for me, it's like I grew up outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So all the George Romero stuff that kind of I grew up on, and definitely had a love for. In fact, like when I used to go shopping for clothes when I was a kid, we would go to the mall that Dawn of the Dead was filmed at.
The Monroeville Mall?
The Monroeville Mall.
That's awesome.
So that was my local mall. So that, you know, just knowing that horror existed, knowing that I'm buying my Nikes here, but there was like, you know, a zombie apocalypse happening here too.
Right.
Oh, this is pretty fantastic. And you get a love for horror. You get a love for just filmmaking in general. Just from growing up in that type of environment and also from living in the woods and having a wild imagination.
Absolutely.
I think mine's kind of like a few things. It started, my dad and I used to watch the Twilight Zone marathons. Well, we'd watch Twilight Zones every Saturday night. There'd be two episodes on our local, like, on Coffee, if you're in the Bay Area. and we'd watch two episodes like almost every weekend, and then during Thanksgiving there'd be a marathon, and we'd tape them all and then watch them. And that was like my first introduction when I was like a kid, you know, like very young, to that sort of thing. While it's not quite horror, it's like in that world. And then
it's like horror adjacent.
It's horror adjacent. Yeah. You know, it makes you interested in that kind of stuff. You know, and then we also catch Outer Limits a lot, and like that which is a little more sci-fi, but and then I think the two that really like solidified it for me were Dream Warriors.
Oh man.
They showed it at my fucking school when I was in elementary school.
No, they didn't.
Reward. Yeah. I mean, Tyler and Chad have heard this story a million times, but they showed it at my elementary school as a reward for like not getting in trouble that year.
Oh my God.
I'm sure heads rolled. I have no idea. I was too young to know, but like, you know, I must have been 10 or something.
Sure.
And I also remember a friend got a copy of Lost Boys as soon as it got on VHS. And that was the other one that was like, oh my God, what is this? This is, and I grew up near Santa Cruz, so like I was familiar with like where the setting in a really like personal way, so it felt so real to me.
Yeah,
like in the best way. But that those are the big ones for me when I was young.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I kind of came up. I mean, I came up reading comic books, so I probably through that medium. But movie wise, I mean, I think my first like genre experiences were probably Alien, Predator, and Killer Clowns from Outer Space was the first movie my dad ever bought for me. Like, I owned that on VHS. It was, you know, he gave it to me on like for a birthday, and we watched it together until the tape blew out.
Sure.
But there was always something. I was always so intrigued by the stuff that my parents were watching and the things that were forbidden. RoboCop, like those movies that were I knew that I shouldn't be watching them. And so those, I think that was probably my intro, like Alien, Predator, Killer Clowns, RoboCop. Like those were the movies that I felt there was an element of danger in having the experience that was so contagious and so exciting.
So my dad actually, when Blockbuster first came into St. Louis, which was like 93, he worked at a Blockbuster, so he would take the posters.
Oh, that's awesome.
I don't have it anymore, unfortunately. I had a Killer Clowns from Outer Space poster, which was like the one where he's, it's the clown hand spinning the earth like a basketball.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I remember that one so well.
That was a poster that I had.
Very cool. Okay.
For me, I'm a Carpenter guy. I became a Carpenter guy as I got older, but my first entry to his world was Halloween, that I was way too young to see. Like, I had a babysitter who's like, no, you'll be fine, just watch this movie. And it was not a good experience for
it's a great babysitter
the 7-year-old that was just exposed. It was, you know, like, you know, NBC would
it is
show
an 80s
it.
Movie
yeah but it, yeah, like NBC like... would show it. There was like the NBC cut that was different, and that was what I saw. And it, like, the scene when Jamie Lee Curtis stands up and the face, the shape comes from behind her, and they, you know, Dean Cundey does that lighting where he illuminates the face, and that's all you can see. Right. It was game over. Like, I did not do well after that. It was not, you know, the ramifications. I don't think we had that babysitter after that, now that I think about it.
It's amazing.
I don't think she came back around. So what are you guys watching now? Like, what's some stuff that kind of gets the creative juices going, or that you guys are into right now?
That's a great question. Good question. Right now, I mean, the most recent things I've watched are just Mindhunter and The Righteous Gemstones.
I was literally going to say the same two things.
Yeah, but those aren't in the horror space.
I think Mindhunter can slip in.
Yeah,
there.
Mindhunter. Yeah, it could be. It definitely could be. And you know, and that's something different. But another show, I've been plugging the show a lot, is called Black Spot. It's a French show. It's on Netflix right now. Season one was on Amazon. That's when I started watching it. 2 years ago, season two just came out recently, but it's a really cool small town in like this remote forest in France, where a murder happened. So it has like a little Twin Peaks vibe going on.
Okay.
But then when you get into the woods, you realize there's like an actual pagan, like a mysticism or fantasy going on in the forest. But it's so grounded, and it's a really interesting show. And it's in French, so I have to watch the entire screen and not look at my phone. So I could read it and know what's going on. So it's like, I'm definitely been into that one lately, to like try to find things that are like, that are just not in our world, but, you know, but grounded by our world. That is a lot of fun.
Can I tell you that in Mindhunter, the slow burn to get to Gary Ridgway is driving me nuts. The best way.
Well, it's not Gary Ridgway.
I'm sorry. It's BTK. Yeah, it's BTK. Yeah,
the BTK stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
It's like a 5-season tease.
That's right.
I don't know. They got a long way to go yet. They got 25 years to go before they go to get there. It's pretty amazing.
There's actually, I just read a comic, well, a graphic novel. God, can't call it a comic because people get mad. By Jonathan Case, called The Hunt for the, I think it's The Hunt for the Green River Killer.
And yeah, it's great.
The guy's dad was the detective, right?
Yeah.
What an, could you imagine?
How crazy.
Like, just that whole, doing that your entire life, your whole life is built around this case, and then you kind of, go away, and then you're like, oh, by the way, here he is, you know, and you get you actually get an ending.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, to that case.
Yeah,
but yeah, I think
so fascinating.
Mindhunter, where they've just been, you know, at the end of season one, when they teased BTK, you're just like, well, all right, that's all we're going to get. And then just like the little snippets through the Atlanta child killer.
Yeah.
And now I assume we're going to get something in season three. Who knows? I don't know.
Or whatever the last season is. I mean, the funny thing about Mindhunter we always talk about is that for all the things that are funny about it, like that choice, it's still like the most watchable show I've experienced in like a long time, where I'm like, I want to just watch it over and over and over again.
Yeah, totally.
So hypnotic.
It's I don't think I've ever seen somebody able to capture like the feel of sometimes when these directors step in, A-list directors step in to do an episode of a TV show, they kind of put their imprint on it. And I don't think I've seen somebody capture David Fincher so well.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, that whole show just feels like a Fincher show. Because they, you know, and I'm not going to...
He sets the tone, man. I mean, he sets it and he's like, here's the blueprint.
Yeah, it's like when Rob Zombie does an episode of CSI, you're like, well, all right, that's weird.
Right.
But I guess that works. Or Kevin Smith, who I love, Kevin Smith, but like when he's doing like Supergirl, you're just like, well, it doesn't really... All right, it doesn't really feel like a Kevin Smith thing when he's directing Supergirl, but who am I, you know? I'm just a kid doing a podcast. Like, I don't know my butt from the ground. What about you? What, anybody else? What are you guys watching or something current that you guys have seen that kind of...
I'm watching that animated show Undone on Amazon, which is a fucking treat.
Is that the Aubrey Plaza show?
No, it looks like Aubrey Plaza. It's Rosa Salazar, who was in Alita Battle Angel and the Maze Runner movies. It is a remarkable show. It's kind of sci-fi fantasy. It's kind of a show about the afterlife. It mixes genres. It's just like wildly inventive, and it's fast and it's strange, and it's funny as hell. It's a very awesome experience, and it's also inspiring. Like, it's given the format and what they do with the animation, it takes these really crazy visual risks that are like singular to the show, that you couldn't do it any other way. It feels like the concept and how the concept was created and how it's being, you know, how it's being shown to people is the sort of perfect thing. It was designed so well to do what it does. So check that out. It's very much worth your time.
In the vein of Scanner Darkly?
A little bit. Yeah, it's a rotoscope on top of a live action frame. But it has its own identity. It feels a little Scanner Darkly, but I don't know. There's a hand drawn kind of feel to it that's really nice. It's sort of rough around the edges in a way that's really that's really endearing and really kind of lets you in.
Okay. It's been on my list, and I, you know, obviously I had a little bit of stuff to do this morning, but yeah. Anything else? Like, I know that for me, go ahead.
Oh, I've just been watching old stuff. I've been kind of like on a, I think in the last month I've watched like Jaws, the original Star Wars trilogy, Dirty Harry, Die Hard, Terminator, Aliens. You know, like, I've just been doing, like, a trip down
classic.
All my favorite movies.
Yeah,
I
I don't see anything
don't
wrong
watch.
With any of that.
It's been a real fucking treat.
It's also nice to go back and realize I actually just rewatched Terminator 1 and 2.
Same.
And it's just like, yeah, these are like we were talking about this on the show about the idea of the final girl. And I think that kind of goes into Ready or Not, where Samara Weaving is definitely a final girl, and how Linda Hamilton is a final girl and Sigourney Weaver is a final girl.
Right.
We asked on the show is like, is that something that's going to go away as more directors put female actors in positions of like lead roles or like action heroes? I mean, you look at Brie Larson or Scarlett Johansson or any of those gals from the Marvel stuff, Gal Gadot. Like, do you guys think that the final girl concept is something that may go away? As
well, it's weird. Like, we never talked about Grace as a final girl, and I know Samara has been saying it should be final woman, which we're
nope,
great
total,
with.
I'm fine with that. If we can call that, yep.
But it's funny. It's like we never thought about her in that way in the character, and it's funny. We've had a few people talk about the final girl aspect in ours, and it's funny because I think we all agree with it conceptually, but there's also a part of us that's like, well, we've seen 10,000 movies where there's just a dude up against a bunch of odds and then they kill everybody.
Sure.
And we don't call them something like a final boy or anything. You know, it's like, yeah. It's weird. Like she's just a woman who's kicking ass. And especially like in our movie, it's like, she's not even a superhero. She doesn't like, she at the end, she's literally cornered until people start blowing up.
Right.
Even
right,
though
right.
She fought like a fucking badass to get there. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so we tried to subvert a lot of that in little ways. But it's interesting. It's an interesting conversation because I do think that, you know, for us, it's more interesting to tell the story of someone who is an outsider than someone who is on the inside.
Okay.
And just the way that our society has been shittily constructed, women are on the outside.
Sure.
So it's a more interesting character, and it's a more heroic story to tell because it's a farther journey to go on. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
It's interesting. It's an interesting conversation.
I think that term will evolve. I think it's less about, you know, like a Linda Hamilton or a Sigourney Weaver or Samara Weaving being a final girl, and it's just more about what the evolution of that is. I'm trying to remember the last movie I saw recently where you had a classic final girl, someone who is like screaming in terror, who has no idea how to deal with
I mean, Midsommar.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, I guess.
And that
she hits all the tropes of it.
She, I gotta tell you.
Right, because she doesn't ever really actively like sort of work against or fight against. I mean, that's a really interesting example of that.
There have been few movies that I have been legitimately fucked up. Like when I saw the first, the original Last House, that was the first time had to pause it and be like, you know what? I'm going to come back. This feels too real. So like there was just an element of that movie that just felt too real. And I saw Midsommar and it's the only other time that I've ever felt like I don't want to be in this movie anymore. Like
Which is funny because the only time I've had that is Hereditary.
Oh, really?
Where I was like, I can't do it. Maybe it's because I just had a kid and I was like, that whole thing that happens in the middle. I was like, wow, this is a really well-made movie. But like, and I know that it's supposed to be making me uncomfortable, but it's making me uncomfortable in a way that I'm uncomfortable with being this uncomfortable.
Yes, exactly.
Which is a testament to the movie, how well the movie's made. I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
I can't even fuck with this. Like,
no, like I remember, so we were doing both, like we did two episodes back to back. And we did Spider-Man and Midsommar. And I saw Midsommar first and then Spider-Man, like, in the same day at the theater. Like, it honestly had an effect of my enjoyment of Spider-Man because I couldn't stop.
Like, you ruined Spider-Man.
It did. I had to see Spider-Man a second time. I was like, okay, I've taken enough time between this and Midsommar. But, like, I felt like Ari Aster kind of has, obviously he said that his next movie, he doesn't want it to be a horror movie, but there was just some, like the un, I think a lot of horror movies to me are filmed at night, right? So everything's in the dark. Midsommar, it's daylight all the time. And it just left you feeling so uneasy. And now I don't know if I want to see that 3-hour cut. I barely made it through the 2-hour cut.
Yeah, not it.
No, not for me. But like, apparently somebody just posted a picture of something that I didn't even notice where like the scene where Danny is being lifted up like on that, that platform, and they're kind of like after she wins.
Oh, like, the face in the bushes.
Didn't notice it until somebody pointed it out. And I was like, yeah, that's why it fucked me up, because I'm seeing this shit that I didn't know was there. And now you're bringing it to my attention. It's like, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's why. Yeah, he's kind of smart. That was good.
Yeah, yeah. The Crowley, he's just such a great, I mean, he's a incredibly skilled filmmaker.
Absolutely.
I think, Matt, as you said, like, you're having the experience he wants you to have. It's just the question is whether or not you want to be having that experience. His movies are so brutal and hard to watch.
They really are. So is there anything on the horizon for you guys that you guys are looking forward to?
I'm going to go watch Midsommar when we get off.
You bold move, brother.
I'm going to find the longest cut possible.
I don't know why you want to do that, but hey, you do you.
No, I mean, dude, Ready or Not was so much fun, and the process of making it was so great that it's like, we're fully like ready to find the next thing. You know, sometimes you finish a project and you're like, shit, I need a break. I need to kind of collect myself, sort of ground myself. We had such a good time making that movie, and we're ready to be back into something.
And I feel like it shows on screen. You know, sometimes you see, I actually just kind of rewatched the first, the two Rob Zombie Halloweens. And there, as much as I enjoy that first one, there is something off about that second one. And that's not a bad thing. You can feel when the creative team kind of isn't there. Like they're there, but they're not.
Oh, is there a story about that on that? I don't know what that is.
So he didn't want to do the second one.
Gotcha.
And they kind of like Carpenter, where like they came to Carpenter and were like, we want to do a second one. He was like, no, thank you. And then the check came in and he was like, well, all right.
Right.
You know, and I feel like that's kind of was the same thing about Halloween too.
Let's make them related.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Right. And I felt like on screen with you guys, with Ready or Not, there was an element of fun. Sure, we've got all this crazy stuff going on, but then you've got like these little snippets of like where the sister keeps killing the maids on accident, or, you know, or even, like I said, Samara Weaving's delivery of lines. But there is just like an element of fun and creativeness that surrounded that movie. So like you can feel that on screen.
That's great to hear. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it was very fun to make, and everybody got along great. And it was like, and we were so under the gun. We shot it in 26 days.
Oh, wow.
For, you know, not a ton of money. And it was kind of like one of those sink or swim together sort of situations.
Sure.
And everybody wanted to be there, you know? So
Everybody wanted to swim.
Yeah. Everyone wanted to swim.
Was there anything that you wanted to put into that flick that you guys couldn't get in?
How long do we have?
As long as you want.
Dude, there was like a post-credit scene that we wanted to shoot that we fought to get into production, but we just ultimately couldn't happen because of time and money.
Yeah.
But it basically took place at a convention hall like 3 months after the events of the movie, and it followed these like a bunch of these rich white people walking around in this packed kind of convention hall talking about what happened to the Laodomises, and they walk through these doors into this giant room, and there are thousands of like rich white people, and it's clearly like a LaBelle convention, and the doors close and you realize, oh fuck, like all of these rich people, they've all made a similar pact,
sure,
in their own way with the same benefactor. But we just,
oh my God, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, and it was the one thing that we were like, fuck, man. We even thought about just, like, shooting it ourselves in L.A., you know, like, sure. In post. Just steal a camera and go fucking do it for no money. But that was the one thing that was like, fuck, man, that would have been a really fun little tag.
So you mentioned earlier that when you got this script in 2015, is that right? 2012.
Yeah, around then.
Okay.
2015-ish.
Okay. That it was longer. That this was, it was not a wedding. It was kind of like, hey, let's go meet the folks. Was there ever a moment where you're just like, we need to shorten this? Or was it like, we should shorten this to make it, I guess, more accessible, if that makes sense? Like, would you have rather it been, hey, we're just meeting the folks, or do you think that the wedding played better?
Oh, I think we're all thrilled with where it ended up.
Okay.
I mean,
yes, totally.
The survive the night thriller is like one of our favorite kind of subgenres.
Yeah.
And the fact that it kind of became that with sort of on its own is fucking awesome.
It worked. I think the survive the night, and then the twisty turns at the end, I thought was there was the moment, you know, I was rooting for them, and then when the twist happens, you're just like, oh, well, this will be interesting. I guess we'll see where we go from here. So I think I kind of wanted to touch on, obviously, the going back to when we were all growing up. Was there ever a flick that you guys gravitated towards where you, like, your friends didn't really know about it, and you're like, dude, you have to see this movie. Like, if you haven't seen this, you have to sit down and watch this. I kind of think of, like, Evil Dead 2 is, like, the one that I would bring to my friends' parties. I'm like, no, 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 I know we want to get hammered, but we seriously need to watch this movie. And, of course, I would be told to leave.
Man, that's a fun one. Mine was not fun. Mine was Pi, the Aronofsky movie.
Oh, no.
I loved that movie in high school, and that's just not something that you're like, hey, guys, let's all get together and have a good time watching Pi.
Sure.
But I still to this day love that movie. But that was one that I kept trying to get people, my buddies, to watch, and they just nobody ever really
said no dice.
Nobody ever
that's,
really.
That's really
on.
Funny. That's funny. I mean, when I was in high school, we watched Speed all the time.
Yeah, you did.
And we watched Speed. And then we one of the earlier films we made, we made a movie called Slow, where there was a bomb in the car and you had to go slow. And we just filmed ourselves going slow all over town and having an insanely long line of traffic behind us and everybody getting pissed.
Oh,
and
man.
Then the big revelation of it all was like, wait, slow. We could be going zero and the bomb won't go off. So we should just park the car. And then we parked the car and we got outside the car and jumped up and down as everybody who was in that line of traffic behind us would be like flipping us off and beeping at us. Yeah, that's a classic.
That's good stuff.
But,
real violent.
Yeah.
What a crazy career turn that guy has had.
Yeah.
Not a turn, but I guess a resurgence. You know, like
resurgence. Yeah, did he ever really go away? You know?
That, I mean like yeah. You know, like those last two. All right, those last two Matrix movies, not the best.
Yeah.
They're not the best. But like, well, I remember we did a. You know, we decided to do John Wick, and we're just like, you know, it's this weird Keanu action movie, and you walk out and you're just like, what? What happened? Like, how is this as good as it is? And there's two more, and they're just as good.
It's Keanu.
Yeah, it is Keanu. Like, that's, now we're getting Bill and Ted 3.
Star. Yeah.
Fuck
you.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, usually what I like to ask people is if you could rank, not even rank, but if you could give me your top five movies, not that are the best, not that are Oscar winners, but what are the top five movies that you could watch on repeat and never get tired of?
Oh, great question.
Yeah.
And they could be garbage movies, you know, and we don't call them garbage movies on this show. We call them deep fried tacos. And what a deep fried taco is, you know, they aren't good for you, right? But you love them anyway.
Well done.
So that's that. So, well, like, they could be deep fried tacos. They could be Oscar. They could be whatever you want.
I feel like we can maybe. Yeah. Do you guys want to just shout some out as we go? Because
let's do that.
Yeah, I mean,
I can name two off the bat.
I can. Yeah, go. What are your
Goodfellas?
Oh, good call.
Yeah, good. Goodfellas feels like an eternal one, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I'll steal Goodfellas as well. The ones that jumped to mind instantly for me are like Joyride.
Really? With Paul Walker?
Yeah, one of my favorite movies of all time. Yeah. In it like 1,000 times. And that's actually one too that like when I saw it, I then spent the next decade telling everybody I know, why haven't you seen this movie?
Oh man.
It's like everything you want out of a movie. It's
well, and that's great. Continued. I feel like we still are trying to convince people to see
it. Then, well, it was written by some bum.
Yeah, that J.J. Abrams guy. What
I mean, what's he ever done? Yeah. Honestly.
Yeah.
So what if he takes over the DC stuff at Warner Brothers?
It's just one of the greatest fucking movies ever. And then, but North by Northwest is another one that jumps to mind where I'm like, I've seen it fucking 1,000 times. It never gets old
it's
for
a
me.
Great one.
I kind of still don't really know what it's about. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Sure.
On the run and, you know, whatever.
Big Trouble in Little China is one of mine. That's one that I'll, if it's on, I'll just, I will watch it. I will fucking watch that movie until it's over.
Kurt Russell is one of those dudes that if you put him anywhere near a credit sequence, like if you say he's in this movie, I don't care how small, you just take my money.
Yeah, you're hooked. Yeah.
Yeah. So, that you know, I jokingly tell my dad that Kurt Russell could have been my dad because they filmed Escape from New York here.
Oh, shit.
In St. Louis, and the hotel.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, the hotel that Kurt Russell was staying at, my mom was like the front desk clerk. So I'm just saying, Dad, like there might be a chance. He's like, you're an asshole, and I was like, yeah, that's fair. But I'm just saying, like,
he's amazing.
You didn't get the looks or the charisma. I was like, you know what? That's fair. I got that from you. So thanks for that.
That's funny.
So, yeah. So anything else?
Pump up the volume.
Lebowski. Oh, pump up the volume. That's a good one. Lebowski.
Legend of Billie Jean.
Oh, man. I always. That's Helen Slater?
Yeah, Helen Slater.
Back to the Future's a good one. Always. That's on my list for sure.
I feel like, can we choose like all the Indiana Jones as like one?
Except for 4.
All of the original trilogy.
Four is the one that has never come out. Like I have that Blu-ray set, and 4 is the one that's never come out of the sleeve. That's
still on the plastic.
Yeah, right. exactly. So, all right. Well, I feel like I've kept you guys rambling for long enough. Do you guys have a date when Ready or Not will be available for home viewing? Have they given that?
That's
out
a great question.
I think that's going to be like question. The first week of November. That's kind of what we've heard, but that is incredibly unofficial.
Sure.
No idea.
Is there a director's cut?
It'll be a lot like the cut that came out in the theater.
That was going to be my question. That was my question.
The volume would just be all turned up throughout, like 3 decibels.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. Do you guys have anything you'd like to plug before we get out of here?
No, I mean, go watch Devil's Due. That's what I want to plug.
So
watch fucking Devil's Due.
Dude,
Point
I swear.
Fox.
I thoroughly enjoyed that movie. Like,
Thank you.
I know you guys kind of like wanted to skip over that, and I was acquiescing, but...
We're proud of that. We're proud of that movie.
It's one of those flicks that I feel like it floated under the radar. But I felt like it was really smart. It was like almost like Ready or Not, where you were rooting for them. You know what I mean? Like you're rooting for
That's awesome.
You're rooting for them as a couple, and like as things start to go haywire, you're just like, oh no, there's nothing we can do to help these people. And then you kind of get that ending that you didn't get at Ready or Not, that you guys wanted to shoot for Ready or Not, where it's just right. I won't say anything. I won't spoil it. But like, you get that ending, and you're just like, "Oh no!"
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's gonna continue.
Exactly. And I think that there's an element of the chemistry that everybody has together. I think those the two leads, right? Correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
Zach and Allison.
Exactly. Like you could feel their career. Like. Almost like your two leads in Ready or Not. Like, you could feel their charisma together, and you believe them.
Yep.
That's great. I mean, that was a big part of us with that movie, was being like, we just, our main goal is to make it feel like this is a believable couple. Like, because it had to be such a small, intimate movie, just by the nature of being found footage. Like, our kind of pitch was like that. It was like almost more romantic than it is like a fucking real in your face genre movie.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the way it came off. So I do like, and both Devil's Due and Southbound are on Amazon Prime. Or not, I'm sorry, Southbound is on Amazon Prime. I rented Devil's Due because of the, I was that committed to you guys.
Damn.
Thank you.
You're welcome. No torrents, none of that bullshit. I'm paying, I'm putting my money where my mouth is.
We can reimburse you the $3.99
or $4.99. No, I want you guys to have, I want you to split that, I want you to split that three ways.
Right.
Yeah, okay, so Matt, where can the, if you want them to find you online, where can they find you?
I think I'm on like Twitter. That's just my last name, Bettinelli Alpin.
All right, and gentlemen, anybody else? If one of they, if Chad,
yeah. Same. I think we're all socials, right? Our names at like on every platform. Chad Bilella.
Yeah, at Chad Bilella. Yeah, and then we're at High Radio Silence. HI Radio Silence.
And also, like I said, go check out that sequence and that first volume. You guys didn't have anything in volume two, right?
No.
Okay. So go check out the first volume of VHS. The segment is called 1031-98. It's a awesome little haunted house story. That's what, like 7 minutes, 6 minutes?
I think it's like 15.
17.
Is it really? God, I feel like I just watched it and it flew right by.
It was quick. Yeah, it's fast.
Yeah, it's very fast. And that's going to wrap us up. Once again, you can follow me on Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21. Don't forget to follow Real Spoilers on Twitter at Real Spoilers. You can also join the League of Show Sharers on Facebook and you can join the conversation there. Gentlemen, again, thank you so much. It's been a blast. I really do appreciate you guys taking the time.
Dude, thank you so much. That was awesome.
Yeah.
So fun.
All right, I'll let you guys get back to your life. We'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
All right, bye. Thanks.
This bride,
I can't wait to be a part of your family,
is here for the right reasons.
Your vows were beautiful.
But his family,
hide and seek,
is playing games.
Good luck.
On August 23rd.
That's insane.
They think they have to kill you before sunrise.
I just saw her running.
Oh my God!
I gotta put on my game face. She's...
You're not rated R.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.